Hello, and welcome to Revolutionize Your Love Life. Do you want to know more about love relationships, what makes them work, how to create the one of your best dreams? Do you want to be in a really healthy, juicy love relationship? In these podcasts, we will give ideas and practical advice to light your way. Whether you're looking for a love partner, already in a relationship you wish could be better, or leaving one that has run its course, there will be something to inspire, empower, and support you. Revolutionize Your Love Life is a fortnightly podcast where you will access the knowledge and wisdom of love experts and relationship coaches from across the world to help you find true fulfillment in love. I am your host, Heather Garbutt. Welcome.
Hello, everyone. I'm here today with the lovely Laura Della Harp, and we're going to talk about the menopause and the andropause. That's the male menopause, and how they interact. Laura has worked in corporate situations for 15 years before she became a registered nutritional therapist since 2006. She's a member of the Institute, the Qualified DNA Life Practitioner, Metabolic Balance Practitioner, and Weight Loss Coach from 2011. She practices kinesiology testing and is a Reiki 3 master. She's appeared in all sorts of TV shows and radio shows, BBC Radio, Sky News, BBC News, ITV News, and the Victoria Derbyshire Show. She's a health and well-being seminars and webinars expert. And in her personal life, that's with her other hand, she has three children, all in their 20s, separated in 2017, but remarried last year to a lovely man. And in amongst all of that, she had thyroid cancer in the middle of menopause. Welcome, Laura.
Oh, lovely to talk to you, Heather.
You have a wealth of experience to bring to this topic. So we want to start off with that quote that you sent me from Diary of a CEO. Do you want to say what that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So 60% of divorces happen during the perimenopause. And I just thought that was incredible, you know, because I think it's such a transition time, isn't it? And then you and I were chatting, weren't we, about, well, what comes up at that point for both partners of that relationship? What's going on? And that's where we started to talk about menopause and andropause and all the lovely stuff.
Yes. Shall I read out the quote?
Yes.
So this is Sara Saal. She's a Harvard-trained doctor. In the menopause, as she's talking about, you speak your truth. Maybe for the first time, about the state of your marriage, about the things you're happy with, about the things you're not happy about. With women in menopause, we see divorce rates increase in this period of life. And that's true. The way it was explained to her by one of her mentors was that when you're in your reproductive years, so pre-menopause, you've got a different level of estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone every day. And it makes you more accommodating, makes you roll with all the punches, and it sets up this level of flexibility that starts to disappear when you go through the menopause. The way her mentor described it was that the hormonal veil is lifted and you start to speak your truth and not accommodate. You speak truth maybe for the first time about the state of your marriage, about the things that you're happy with, about the things you're not happy about. And it does lead to an increased rate of divorce. Wow.
I know.
Yeah. So can you give me a broad outline of what women can experience in a greater depth?
Yes, absolutely. So part of perimenopause, as you just mentioned, is your hormones, estrogen, testosterone and progesterone are all starting to drop. And it can take 10 to 15 years for some women to go through that whole process of them dropping to the postmenopausal level. But those hormones, you know, they, as you say, that testosterone is kind of our motivation. Progesterone helps us with anxiety and sleep and keeps us calm. And estrogen, I think I kind of that's our sort of feisty hormone, I think, estrogen. It means madness in Greek, would you believe? It's our feistiness, I think, which is fantastic. So as those hormones start to drop, we change shape. And again, not every woman's going to have all of these symptoms. So it's not doom and gloom, but we'll get a smattering of them, shall we say. And some women just sail through. We might get hot flushes. We might get insomnia, depression. Our periods might become heavier. The cycle might become shorter. We've got more inflammation, so women maybe start to feel more aches and pains. I certainly had a frozen shoulder, two frozen shoulders during perimenopause. Blood pressure changes and heart disease changes. It becomes more equivalent to how a man would feel, blood pressure and heart disease, because we haven't got the protection of those hormones that we had earlier. We know the gut microbiome changes, and we are less sensitive to insulin because estrogen helps us with that. And so a lot of women start to get pre-diabetic as well. So that's just a few of them. And then, of course, from an intimacy point of view, perhaps with testosterone going down, we start to lose interest in sex, or maybe we don't feel as attractive. It might even be that sex is becoming uncomfortable, maybe even painful. And maybe when we look in the mirror, we don't like what we see anymore. We don't necessarily love our bodies quite as much as we did when we were younger, and could get our body to respond quite quickly when we wanted to maybe lose some weight or build some muscle or tone up or whatever it would be.
Yes, and the other piece that I hear a lot about, obviously, because I deal a lot with the psychology and emotions, is the brain fog.
Oh,
Can you
yes.
speak a bit about that?
Yes, so again, we know that as the estrogen levels drop, the brain doesn't function as well. And that's why we know that things like HRT or keeping that estrogen level up helps to reduce our risks of dementia and Alzheimer's in women, because it is much higher in women than it is in men. So I think that's part of it, is definitely those the estrogen dropping. We have estrogen receptors throughout the body. And in the brain as well. So I think that's what we're seeing. But I think also, as the gut microbiome changes, we sometimes might see, say, a yeast overgrowth in the gut as well, which might also give us some brain fog. So I think there's a whole load of stuff going on at the same time. So it isn't necessarily one specific thing, but I would completely agree with you. The forgetfulness. And I think the progesterone side around anxiety also plays with how the brain's functioning as well. And if you're not sleeping, then again, your brain's not had its wash during the night either, has it?
Yeah, so it can create quite a perfect storm.
It absolutely can. And I think a lot of men are looking at their partners and thinking, what's happened? Where's she gone? Kind of thing. Then, and what have I done wrong? What, that whole, is it me kind of thing, and not really understanding what's going on.
Yes, I get that quite a lot. Women are saying their partners started to say, "Do you love me anymore?"
Yes. Yes. And I think what I think is we, and I think it is happening. I think as well as educating women on the menopause, because I think for a while it was a bit taboo, wasn't it? It was kind of one
Oh,
of those
yeah.
things that women just didn't talk about. We called it the change, for goodness sake.
Spoken in hushed tones.
Exactly. But I think again, it was like, well, this is women's business. This isn't something we discuss with men. I'm talking probably about my mum's generation rather than our generation. But I think therefore men have been in the dark a little bit.
Yes, it's a bit of a mystique.
So I think part of what we all need to do is also help men prepare to support their partners.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so many of them are really willing, but just don't know where to begin.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's educate them the best we can. I think we've got our other
Absolutely.
podcast that might help with
Yes.
that. But here, I mean, this one we're talking about the andropause too, and what
Yes.
men are experiencing. So it's not that they're not changing at all either. So you've got a sort of synchronized changing going on, which is quite a revolution to traverse, I think. So tell me a little bit more about what men are experiencing as they grow older.
So, in the same way that women's hormones are starting to drop, men's are also dropping as well. So, their dominant hormone is going to be testosterone. They've got an awful lot more of testosterone than women have. And they do also make a little bit of estrogen as well. So, they're not without those other hormones, but their dominant hormone is the testosterone. So, that starts to drop. So, they might find their own libido is going down. They might find, that their physique is also changing. Again, they can't build muscle the same way, that they used to. And we know over 60, whether you're male or female, you are more at risk of starting to get muscle wasted. So sarcopenia is what it's called. So they might also be finding that they are not the shape that they like to be in. They might find their performance in the bedroom isn't what it used to be. Or as I say, they might find, whereas, maybe they wanted sex every night, maybe they want it once a month, so again, as you say, you're navigating that together. We also know that stress, so cortisol, which is a hormone that we absolutely need, it gets us out of bed in the morning, it drives us to achieve things, it's a really important hormone. But if we are producing too much of it because life is quite stressful, and again, sometimes, your 40s, particularly, maybe where you've got to in your career is a little bit more stressful, or you're putting children through university and, the monetary stresses are building. We know that stress will choose to quieten down some of the other hormones so that you can make the cortisol. So you might find that things like testosterone starts to go down because your body is saying, I can't make everything. And at the moment, you seem like cortisol is the one I need to make for you. So we'll just switch off your libido for the moment, and we know some men can't perform so well in the bedroom either, and that's also something that, again, men don't talk about, There's a lot of shame around all of that, isn't there?
There absolutely is. Yes, absolutely. I hear that a lot too. And that, you put those two things together, of women may be experiencing dryness, sometimes pain, sometimes a urinary tract infection after sex. And so there's all that going on, and then the men maybe cannot sustain an erection over a period of time. It can become a fraught area rather than a loving area.
And I think it puts pressure on both of them, doesn't it? It puts
It
pressure.
does.
And I think, that, as we know, that's one of the big distinctions, isn't it, between any other relationship is the intimacy that you share as a couple.
Yes.
And if that is changing, it's, I'm sure you must come across this a lot. You've got to find other ways to show that you're loving each other and that you still have that intimate relationship, but it's not pinned on one specific act,
No.
and that you're nurturing and loving each other in a way that allows that the relaxation for both of you to occur, so that you can still, have whatever that looks like for you, but have that intimacy. But
Yeah,
that comes with, sorry, go on.
well, I think you're right. I think the love languages really come to the fore at this time of life. How do each of you feel loved? That's so important. And sort of the, going to bed together, being close and sexual together is a sort of fail-safe that whatever happens in the day, you've got that, and you can just come back together and feel connected and start the day afresh from that reconnected place. But if that bit starts being fraught and you haven't necessarily got your love expressed during the day, then you can see where divorce goes. And I think we talked about it when we were chatting about the importance of conversation, the importance of understanding, of stating what's going on, and making sure that the other person knows this is not your fault. This is not because I don't find you attractive anymore. This is, you know, because of what's happening in my body. And that can happen from both sides. Yeah. But explain to me a little bit about what happens to men in their bodies that really affect their sexual performance.
So I think, you know, when we look at an erection, we're talking about a lot of blood vessels, aren't we, to which are going to expand, relax, expand, allow blood flow to allow that erection to occur. And, you know, if you look at a man who's stressed, it may well be he's also got high blood pressure. And high blood pressure will constrict those blood vessels and they don't relax between heartbeats. So I almost think someone who's having erectile issues, so some dysfunction, it is almost a little bit of a smoking gun to say, you need to look at your cardiovascular system with your GP and just check out your blood pressure, just check whether your arteries are getting furred up, what's your cholesterol doing, to also just see it as, you know, a little message from your body to say, actually, maybe your health's not quite right. And if we put some of these other things right, maybe actually the erectile dysfunction will start to go down a little bit. If you look at Viagra, what Viagra does, it relaxes the blood vessels. So there's a drop in blood pressure in men when they're taking Viagra, and then they get a bounce back of blood pressure, obviously, once it's disappeared in their system. So sometimes they'll even get headaches afterwards. And that is a known side effect with Viagra. And the headaches are because the blood pressure has now gone back up to the point where it's, you know, giving you pressure in your brain.
Gosh. So can anything else help with all of that? Is there anything natural that could help?
Yes. So I think, as I say, it's first going the medical route, isn't it? Just to see how is the cardiovascular system working. So for some people, it might be that they do need to go on blood pressure medication. But we know things like magnesium help a lot. Sometimes a little bit of testosterone might help with that. Some people will look at supplements. Again, you would work with someone on something like this. But there are supplements that help to improve the furring up of arteries and so forth. And then, of course, it is diet, it's lifestyle, it's exercise. It's all that stuff that you would do for a cardiovascular improvement anyway. If you're eating lots of sugar, if you're creating lots of inflammation in your body, because sugar does create inflammation, then you're more likely to get, you know, furring up of arteries and things like that. So, and you're more likely to get higher cholesterol. So it all comes back to the healthier your life is, the less likely you are to have that. And of course, you know, as I say, you go the medical route, see if there's anything else going on. You know, men should be getting their prostates checked as well, just to make sure that's functioning okay. You know, they need a thorough checkup. And I think, again, women go to the doctor more quickly than men do.
They do. And when they get there, they're not always as expressive about what's happening. I don't know if, if this is a big rule of thumb or just the men I happen to know. But they don't want to change their lifestyle. They like it how it is, you know, just like the rest of us, really. You know, it took me a while to give up biscuits, as you saw the other night when they appear before me. I can't resist them, so I don't buy them now.
No,
but you know, but there's that sort of habit, and I think about alcohol as well, and amount of sugar in alcohol, and men like their beer. It's a cliched British thing. So yeah,
and you know, beer's full of hops, isn't it? So hops are a natural estrogen, which is why men get the man boobs and the belly. And also, you know, estrogen plays around with their prostate health.
Goodness me, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So yeah, beer is not a great a great choice. But you're right. I think, you know, when I'm working with people, I always kind of get them to weigh up what's most important to them. So is the food most important, or is it how they feel? So, for example, you know, you might have a food that gives you IBS. You might love that food. Now, you might decide that on a Saturday night, when you have that food, you've got all day Sunday to recover the consequences of that food. But equally, during the week, you might decide, actually, I've got some really important meetings tomorrow and I've got to travel there by public transport. I can't afford for my IBS to be playing up. So you then would make the decision, actually, I won't have that food tonight because that's not going to serve me tomorrow. So I think it's always a way up. I think where it gets harder, that's a really easy one, isn't it? A consequence is tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's harder is where a consequence is maybe in 20 years' time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's where I think it's much harder. But I, again, you know, my view is I want to live a long, healthy, I want a long health span, not a long lifespan.
Absolutely. Yes. To live a lot longer in a healthy state, even if you might not live to 102. At least if you live to 90 healthily. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. As opposed to sitting for 10 years in, you know, being cared for on lots of medication just to keep you alive.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, but again, that's a personal choice, isn't it? You know, some people say, well, I just want to, as you say, I just want to eat anything I like and I don't need to live a long time. That's tough if your partner's like that and you're not. that's another discussion, isn't it?
It absolutely is. Yes.
You know, but yes, so it is about choice ultimately. But I try and educate people on the consequences, and then that's up to them, isn't it, to decide what they're going to do. But I think some people don't realize that, you know, maybe if you switch from a hops type alcohol, maybe to a white spirit, which is the cleanest there probably is, and have that occasionally, it probably has less of an impact on your health than the beer and the wine.
Okay. Well, that's useful to know. That's really useful to know. And what about brain fog for men as well?
Yeah, I, you know, we do know that men get dementia and Alzheimer's. Again, some of that is going to be lifestyle. So we know smoking is probably one of the biggest impacts that has on brain health, because we get vascular dementia where the arteries get filled up from smoking. Strokes, again, smoking is a big one for causing strokes. And actually, you know, probably more women get strokes than men, and men get more heart disease. So I think, yes, they will get diminishing brain health. And we know that sugar particularly destroys brain cells. So it's not so much hormonal, but maybe goes back to your point, which is, you know, if they're choosing to eat all the naughty stuff all the time, then they're going to end up with what we call glycation. So we are destroying proteins in the brain through overeating sugar. So that's why we call dementia and Alzheimer's, well, Alzheimer's more than dementia, but we call it type 3 diabetes.
Got you. Right. So I think it might just be useful to give a list of the things that you consider to be sugars, because I think there's a misconception that it's just, you know, your pure white or pure brown sugar. But what else is sugar in?
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. So if I get a food diary from someone, they might say to me, I don't eat much sugar, because they're not putting sugar in their tea or in their coffee. They're not putting sugar on their breakfast cereal. That's kind of where they think sugar comes from. But what we know is that starches, so that might be bread, pasta, rice that you wouldn't even think are sweet, any white flours, when we eat them, they break down and become sugar. So there's a lot of hidden sugar in our food. And of course, if we're eating anything that's ultra processed, there'll be a lot of sugar hidden in there as well. And it might not even say the word sugar on the label. There might be all sorts of other words used. You know what it's like? You look on the back and there's 30 ingredients. You've got to, you know, if sugar's in the first five, you know it's going to be very sweet. But as I say, you're eating something that breaks down into sugar. So when I'm working with people, I'm getting them to really understand where that sugar is coming from, and not to completely exclude it, but we are aiming to have it to be, you know, 5-10% of your plate, rather than maybe 50-75% of your plate. If you look at, I don't know, pasta with a tomato sauce, the way we cook pasta in the UK, it's about 75% of the plate, isn't it? With a little bit of sauce on top. If you go to Italy, they don't give you anywhere near that amount of pasta. And it's just a little, it's just a little section before you have your main meal, isn't it? It's not actually even the main meal.
No. Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, and so I'm just making these links as we're talking, that the inflammation that you talk about at the beginning for both men and women, whatever we're eating, if we're eating things that cause inflammation, it exacerbates all of the effects that you're talking about.
Completely. And when you're eating high sugar foods, you're more likely to get a blood sugar spike. And then a couple of hours later, you'll get a blood sugar crash. So, you know, we hear about people talking about, you know, 2 o'clock, they're falling asleep at their desks, or they're, you know, a training course and you're delivering the course and everyone's asleep at 2 o'clock. That's from whatever they had for lunch. They might have had, particularly in a meeting, they might have had a tray of sandwiches, mightn't they? So there's a lot of bread going in. By 2 o'clock, they're all feeling really sleepy. Now, when we've got that slump, the brain kicks in, because obviously it doesn't like being short of sugar. It will start to release stress hormones, so cortisol and adrenaline, and it would also get you to crave sugar, because it wants you to have some more so that it can get its lift. So going back to that sex hormone thing, you know, you're now producing the cortisol that gets prioritized over your sex hormones. So you might find a woman has a hot flush as her blood sugar dips, because the stress hormones are coming out, and it's the drops in sex hormones that causes the hot flushes, not the rises. So, for example, we know coffee and alcohol raise sex hormones, but then a few hours later that will drop, and that's where the hot flush will appear.
Okay. Oh, this is fascinating. There's so much to talk about. Is there anything else you want people to know?
Yeah, I think going back to the inflammation, as you say, I think the more you can manage inflammation in your body, the better able you are to just deal with a whole load of stuff that's going on in your system. You know, inflammation is behind most things, really. If you think about anything with inflammation, we label it itis, don't we?
Yes.
You think about anything in your body, labyrinthitis, arthritis, cystitis, it's all inflammation. So if we can eat in such a way that we keep that as minimal as possible, we're really helping our body to deal with what it needs to deal with, you know.
Yeah. So this transition in midlife is bigger than we think. It's on every level, really. Mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually. Yeah.
Every level. And I think the more we can prepare for it, the better.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not against HRT at all. I think, again, you get the medical advice and you get the right thing for you and you try it. It didn't work for me. But again, I think people should be allowed to try it for them. And I also think maybe some men could do with a bit of HRT, bit of testosterone. That might be also something that some men would find helpful.
Yes, you know, I've experienced that with men that I've seen in psychotherapy years ago.
Right.
The loss of testosterone seemed to go with depression, and rather than have antidepressants, they had some hormone replacement testosterone, and it made such a difference.
Yes, and that's a good point. I think historically, women were probably given antidepressants where they needed HRT.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much, Laura.
You're very welcome.
Contact you.
So my website is nutritionalbenefits.co.uk. I'm on Instagram, nutrition_with_Laura. I'm on Facebook as well. Yeah, I mean, just get in touch. I have a free discovery call on my website, so you can book in for a 15-minute chat, see if I can help you, see if I'm the person that you need. I always think you've got to find that chemistry between you, see if you're the right person. Yeah, very easy for people to get in touch.
And they don't need to work with you in person?
No, they can work online, and they can also work in person, whichever is their preference.
That's lovely. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for hosting me as well.
You're very, very welcome. It's a delight to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Revolutionize Your Love Life. I'd like to know what has been your biggest takeaway from this conversation. Do take a minute and share this with us and visit us on our Facebook page. You can connect with me personally on my email at heather@heathergarbutt.com. If you can think of someone who will benefit from listening to this podcast, please do share it with them. If you have any feedback on how I can improve it, please do reach out to me, as I'm always keen to learn more. Thank you so much again for listening, and we'll meet again on the next episode of Revolutionize Your Love Life.